In this episode of Football 301, Charles and Matt join me from New Orleans as we look at our favorite things from the 2024 season. We also predict a couple things that we think are going to happen in the 2025 season. Pretty fun show. We're in New Orleans. It's live, in person. See you guys in a sec. Welcome to Football 301. We're at the Toyota Land Cruiser set here at Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans. And today, we're going to go over some of our favorite things from the 2024 season. Things that stood out, highlights, teams, players, all that good stuff. And then we're going to give some bold predictions for the 2025 season. See if in a year from now, if those hold up or if we just feel like fools, which is most of the time. To help me do that, though, my guys, Charles McDonald, Matt Harmon, how you guys doing today? I'll start with you, Charles. How are you doing here in New Orleans after day one?
You know, this city has produced something foul in the Saints, right? Which I think we all need to reckon with from time to time.
Fair point.
But it's an incredible city. I was walking around with my buddy Cam Wolf and Emmanuel Morgan last night on Frenchman Street, just popping around jazz clubs and going to street fairs. I mean, I'm really excited to see what the next 7 days have in store for us here because I had a blast on night one.
We'll get the jazz club reviews at the end. Do you remember the names yet?
I only remember one. It's called the Blue Nile, which is very fire.
Fun name. I like that a lot. All right, we'll maybe go there tonight. Matt, how are you doing today, first day in New Orleans?
I'm doing great. I did not have any fun last night. I had a great meal.
Okay.
And then I put myself to bed early, got up. Got the 2 mile walk in, got the gym session. So ready to start off on the right foot and then completely lose that footing here in the next few days.
We all of us in our old age, we compared hydration notes. We compared our prep for this, how we were feeling, how fit we're feeling, which is, I'm actually okay. I'm giving myself a B+. I actually feel pretty good for this. Yeah, I know. So we'll see. Ask me on Wednesday or Thursday and we'll see how it goes from there. But also we were going to go over some of those favorite things from 2024, some of the things from 2025 predictions, but also there's some news in the NFL. Because it doesn't stop in the NFL. First, we're going to start with Myles Garrett, who has requested a trade from the Cleveland Browns. Kind of long time coming, it feels like, with how the Browns season, maybe not 2 years ago, but feels this last year has really been a little too much for Garrett, and maybe the Browns situation. Charles, what do you make of this? Do you think this is justified for Myles' end? Yes.
Yes.
And are there any teams that maybe come to mind as maybe as a trade partner to maybe send off Myles Garrett to better pastures?
All of them.
Yeah. yeah, we're the Browns picking this here.
Okay, but I'm glad that we have gotten here because I was about to start a wellness check on Myles Garrett a month ago when he was like,
Stockholm Syndrome.
Right. He was like, I'm back in, you know, I believe in the vision. I don't know what happened in the past month to change your mind on that because you haven't played a single football game. It's not like you can make any transactions right now to make your team better or worse. So I guess he just came to Jesus and looked at what we all do. We go through the Cleveland Browns Spotrac trade and see how much cap space they have. And you see that over the next 2 years, Deshaun Watson's eating up $144 million worth of cap space. And ideally, best case scenario is he doesn't play. So you need to get the hell out of there as fast as you can. I understand that Andrew Berry has said, we don't want to trade Myles. Obviously, you don't want to be in a situation where you have to trade Myles Garrett, but you're here. And the truth of the matter is, you don't have any money to spend over the next couple of years. The best way to get good players in on cheap deals is the draft. So you're going to lose Myles Garrett in the process. But if you're a contending team, I would say any team that made the playoffs or is sniffing the playoffs, you should probably try to trade for Myles Garrett no matter what it costs.
And with just kind of the rest of their team, we always focus on Deshaun Watson, but also like their whole entire offensive line will be free agents in 2026. I think a majority of them, four of them, will be free agents. So it's not even just that. It's like other aspects of this team. Matt, any kind of team stuck out to you? Is that maybe like, oh, okay, this one, yeah, that one, I want to see it, fan fiction, or maybe just even logical sense comes into play?
Before we talk about that, I do want to address the timing of this because you're right, like what happened over the last month? Let's be real about what happened here. The NBA had a massive trade go down that the entire world is talking about. I'm sure Roger got on the blower with like any disgruntled NFL players out there want to request a trade here. This is our week. We're not having the damn NBA take headlines during Super Bowl week. I don't think so that's my conspiracy theory on timing wise of this, but yeah, this has been brewing for a while. In terms of teams, I mean, like, Buffalo should be interested. I don't know if they can figure it out cap-wise. I mean, realistically, yeah, I would say 31 teams should at least kick around the idea of it. Because, yeah, like, I think it's easier to go down the list and say, like, okay, let's start crossing teams off. Like, yeah, Philadelphia should be interested, but can they pull it off salary cap-wise?
I wouldn't doubt anything at this point.
I know, yeah, right. I know. Shoot, the Saints are probably going after them.
Yeah,
we can make this work.
I mean, Chicago, a team that should definitely make a call.
Washington was one that came to my mind as maybe, because they have a ton of cap space. Yeah, and there's some interesting teams, but yeah, it was kind of, I like that you brought up that the NBA news comes over. If this trade does happen, do it between 9 and 5. I asked that because I was seeing all those 3 a.m. live reaction pods.
Yes, yeah.
We're in the offseason. I don't know if I'm going to feel in any of those reactions. But no, another big news happened, and someone we talked about recently, Matt, and that's Chip Kelly got hired as offensive coordinator with the Raiders. I kind of was not hedging my bets. I would have gone all in thinking that he was going to be the Texans offensive coordinator. Maybe even the Jaguars was a team I heard as well. But ends up being the Raiders offensive coordinator. Matt, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, number one, whenever you start a thought of why did he end up with this team, you just look at the salary number. $6 million per year makes him the highest paid coordinator in the NFL. So that's why he is the Raiders offensive coordinator. But beyond that, yeah, our conversation about Chip Kelly last week definitely got my gears turning about what he could look like. And I'll tell you what, my number one takeaway is it's a Pete Carroll-led team with Chip Kelly as the offensive coordinator. I can't wait to draft the hell out of whoever is the running back for this team in fantasy next year. And there's a lot of rookie running backs in the class that are potentially interesting, including guys from Ohio State. They're placed where Chip Kelly's coming from. Two of them. Guys, plural.
Yes.
But yeah, beyond that, obviously, you've got basically two guys in the passing game that I think are foundational pieces in Brock Bowers and Jacoby Myers, too. Obviously, Bowers being the headline player there. I joked on Twitter that maybe we'll see Bowers
like
in the Jordan Matthews role.
One seal clapping at that.
Like, yeah, let's see it. Well, see, I got myself in trouble by saying that because my whole thing is I'm never charting tight ends for reception. Perception, that was a little bit too close. I flew a little too close to the sun with that joke. Still not going to happen. Still not going to do that. But I do think how Bowers could be deployed as kind of a big interior player is interesting here. And Myers, too. He can obviously do that stuff as well. This team does feel like it's primed to add one speed receiver on the outside to just clear space for those guys, even if he doesn't have to be like a huge target earner. But yeah, I know the Raiders are close to a blank slate kind of roster, but they do have enough on offense to get me excited about this.
Al Davis is so excited to hear that.
Yeah.
From his grave. Kind of go, we need a speedy receiver. Like, yeah, sub 4.4. Let's do it.
Let's get our 2-2 Atwell in here. Just a space clearer.
That's exactly what it was. Darius Hayward Bay coming back.
He went to my high school.
Did he?
Yeah.
He was Maryland too, right? Yeah. The University of Maryland. That's right.
I've met him a couple times.
Really? He can run. That's all I'll say.
That's all I'll say, too.
Yeah, exactly. He was a Raider for a reason. But Charles, actually, yeah, even just speaking of kind of the Raiders franchise, like, this is kind of like Tom Brady is one thing. You know, all right, that's kind of like feels more like a narrative thing. But then still see that he has some input on this team. This team sold 15% of their share to new owners now that we can get that influx of cash. And that's really signaled some moves. I mean, paying $6 million for a coordinator that's huge. And I can say this, like knowing the numbers, that's 4 times the amount the previous offensive coordinator made. So, you know, usually you're making that $1.5 to $3 million range at the top end and now making $6 million. So also, it's a whole new world for coordinators. So I'm sure there's a lot of happy coaches. I don't want to be a head coach. I'm kind of liking this OCDC money. But Charles, what do you kind of feel like this signals for the Raiders? Kind of like just what they are now.
That money's green as hell, ain't
right? cash speaks very loudly.
I mean, hey, you've got, there's legitimacy here with Tom Brady as well.
Yeah.
Too,
And Pete.
Yeah. Right, because it's obviously what's happening here. Mark Davis has made so many mistakes that he's tired of making mistakes like any normal person would be, but you're not going to get rid of the team. So we open up some floodgates for minority owners to come in and spend some money. You get Tom Brady. You say, oh, I've missed all this stuff. Tom, why don't you take over for a little bit? So now you've got Tom and Pete, which at least is more credible from a football perspective than what it used to be. But I think the story of the Raiders is they got money that they did not have access to over the past 3 years. And I'm sure when you start thinking about the John Gruden contract, that was 10 years, $100 million, mm-hmm. where you lost them. Josh McDaniels got fired recently. Mm-hmm. Antonio Pierce got fired recently. Mark Davis's life is not cheap right now.
Okay? No.
So he needed to...
WNBA team.
right. And that's the only time. I mean, I was there a couple years ago when the Aces beat the Liberty in Brooklyn. That's the only time I've ever seen Mark Davis happy in my entire life. And I've seen him a handful of times, but when he was dancing on the floor with the Aces players in Brooklyn, I'm sure he's feeling that right now. We got some money. We got Tom Brady.
but it also gives them, like you say, it's like they're signaling something new because now they just go, yeah, I don't know. All right. Well, we just hired. It felt like they went through every kind of like trope of coach. We bring back the old, okay, we went with Del Rio. Okay, all right, that didn't work. Okay, now we're going to bring in Gruden. Okay, because that was the Raider coach. Okay, now let's get a Patriot guy, Josh McDowell. All right, let's get a former player?
Yeah.
All right, let's try that.
Like a morale guy?
Yeah, morale. Like, we'll go with that. And that's also why I thought the Antonio Pierce thing kind of happened because of the lack of cash and paying two full staffs. Pierce had like the biggest coaching staff because they didn't want to fire people then pay them as well. So it's an interesting stage for the Raiders. Still have to figure out the quarterback, but at least they feel like worth talking about a little bit. And I think it's going to be interesting in that division.
What's Marcus Mariota up to? You know, he can already do the Photoshops, you know?
That's actually a great point. I didn't even think about that with Mariota. Yeah, I know. Because I was like, they're not going to go with Minshew or something like that. You know? Like,
I mean, I have no idea. Like, what does the Chip Kelly quarterback even look like in the year 2025?
I said that line last week that Chip Kelly, someone asked him because everyone thought like Vic would be the best Chip Kelly quarterback. And he goes, no, Rajon Rondo would be the best Chip Kelly quarterback. Chip Kelly said this. And I always thought that was so interesting. But he's saying, I just want a distributor. I want a guy to just do. But like right now, that's easier said than done.
Because
even the guy that's linked to Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson,
that's not his distributor. MO. No. Yeah.
That's a big play guy. So it's going to be interesting where they go from here. But at least they got some cool, fresh ideas. We're going to take our first break. And then we're going to come back with some of our favorite things from the 2024 season. Welcome back. We're at the Toyota Land Cruiser set here at Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans. We're going to get into our best moments from 2024. Really just go anywhere here. It could have been a really bad moment for one team. It's the one that's going to come to my mind. But it could be a highlight. It could be a player that was really the subpar of the season. It could be a team. It could be an offense, whatever. Charles, I'm going to start with you. When you think back at 2024, what were some of the highlights from your season?
I mean, I wouldn't know if I'll call it a highlight, but basically, everything that happened to the Jets after Aaron Rodgers throws that final interception in London against the Vikings. Because
it was pivotal, man.
Yeah. Because it culminates in a story by The Athletic where we learn that Woody Johnson and his son are in part deciding who plays for the team based on Madden awareness rating. And if you played Madden, awareness is maybe the one that matters the least.
Yeah.
Because you're controlling the player.
Yeah. So, right. Because that's just an overall booster, right?
Right, it's fluff, but they like I started thinking about this, and I love like these little threads that just pull through some nonsense the whole season. And you start off with how exciting people were about the Jets. We were kind of agnostic. Like, yeah. I don't know. I would accept any outcome with this team.
I think they might be a top 10 offense and a bottom 10 offense at like a different segments in the preseason.
Yeah, totally. Which, you know, there were moments where it looked like it was going to work, like the Texans game.
Yes, that's right. I know.
But you get to that London game and it just all falls apart. Robert Saleh fired. Apparently just on a whim by Woody Johnson. No one seemed to know that that was the thing that was going to happen. Then you get the Davante Adams trade, which did nothing really. And then we get the Madden story. And it's just like, man, even in a year where it's all supposed to go right, you still have one of the worst Jets seasons in a long time. Because it's not just that you were bad. You're always bad. But you paid to be bad. And that's where it got funny.
Same with the Deshaun Watson thing. It's like, you paid for this. I loved when we got to the point where they were posting Zach Wilson and Aaron Rodgers stats side by side.
We got to that very quick, by the way.
Yeah. It wasn't even at the end of the season where it's like, hey, guys, here's some cold water. It was like, no, Jets fans, like, 2 months in, like, no, this is this is terrible. No, but that's a great one, too, because there's some of those sacks, especially in that London game, the Europe game, stick out to me because it was just like, oh, man, they haven't solved any of this. And some teams just kept attacking them the same way. Broncos, Vikings, you name it. Matt, that was a great, I don't know if a highlight, but maybe a pivotal moment of the season. Maybe we'll transition to that. What about you?
Yeah, mine's not quite along the same lines, but sort of, kind of. One of the moments of the season to me has to be that Browns-Broncos psycho Monday night game. you know, where we just got two quarterbacks just saying F the whole game. I mean, that was probably the peak of the Jameis experience for the Browns, which, I mean, the Browns don't deserve anything good to happen to them because they're truly, like, they're that F around and find out team right now. But I mean, that was still a fun moment to watch Jameis, Jerry Jeudy tearing up his former team. And Bo Nix just, again, mindlessly throwing deep over the middle of the field. And I thought that was, again, just one of the most insane games of the season. And still, it is also kind of pivotal storyline because it did show like what made the Broncos offense, as people reminded us all year, so enjoyable to watch, Nate Tice. But also, it's the Jameis experience where I feel like Jameis should at this point just moonlight as, you know, which like wayward wide receiver needs to be saved. I think the Jets actually like, hey, Garrett Wilson, you want to be happy? Let's have this guy throw you 200 targets next year. That kind of solidified, I think, his place in the NFL right now is that guy. But at the same time, again, it's what made the Broncos a good team as well. And just two guys, like I said, completely mindlessly throwing deep balls all night.
As you were talking, do you guys remember the Super Mario, the Hammer Brothers? The two guys that jump up and down and throw hammers.
Hell yeah.
That was that game.
Just
spinning every which way, hitting some things, not hitting other things. But yeah, I just thought about that.
That just made me think of another highlight from the season.
Okay, great. Well, the Jameis experience, and you had different terms for it when we were doing like fantasy shows and stuff.
It was the pump and dump. Just pump up those production numbers, and then he gets benched.
Every time I looked at Judy's numbers, I was like, really?
Dude, he was 40th in receiving yards during the Watson era, or like 44th, and then he finished like top five,
right?
Or something.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's insane. But yeah, I love a good Jameis experience. Maybe even on the football field. All right, this felt like a big moment for two franchises, and really it was the beginning of the end of one, like literally and figuratively and spiritually. And that was when, and kind of the launching point of the other, and that's when the Washington Commanders beat the Chicago Bears on a last second Hail Mary. Because at that moment, I felt like the Bears were the better team. I felt like they were actually kind of starting to do some really nice things the month, especially with their offense. We talked about Shane Waldron, and we're like, man, actually Shane Waldron doing some okay things here. And then I thought the defense was going to be quite good. Then that happened. And who was it? Tyreek Stevenson was in the end zone, pumping up the crowd.
Fighting the crowd.
Yeah, fighting the crowd.
That's the craziest part of that is that it was already
insane just watching the game, and then that comes out afterwards.
Yeah. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, I know. Everything, and even leading up to it, because they gave the play before where they gave him a bunch of yards to get into striking distance, and everyone, like even they showed Caleb Williams on the sideline trying to go like, what are you guys doing on defense here? Like, get the sidelines. Like, no, what are we doing? And like, just that whole sequence. And then the Bears defense fell completely apart. They fired everybody. Now, obviously, we're on to the Ben Johnson era, which you can see anyways. But then the Commanders felt like that was kind of crystallized their season. Kind of like they had so many last second wins, so many last play wins and last play game or games decided on the last play. Kind of felt like that encapsulated their season a little bit, that ended up being in the Final Four, actually.
I will never forget that play as long as I live, because I watched it so many times. Someone in the crowd.
Afternoon game. Like, everybody was watching. Everyone was interested in that game.
But someone who was sitting in the crowd took just the perfect angle of it, where they're like off to the side a little bit, where Stevenson is drawing back and forth with the crowd. The play starts, and the Commanders, they were about 55 yards away from the end zone, I think. He didn't turn around until their receivers were on the 30-yard line. I'm like, yo, you let them run 25 yards before you even turned around to start the play.
With Bears fans in front. You can see in the video, Bears fans going like, oh, hey,
it started. And then the best part is, now that he's panicking, that he has to recover and go get there.
And it was his guy.
Yes, he jumps for the ball and tips it right to the guy he's supposed to be covering for. It's Noah Brown, I think, right?
They caught him. Yeah.
I've seen that in NBA where a player was drawn at the sideline or something like that, or I should just say basketball. I've never seen that in football. Like, I've never seen a player, like, I've seen it before play, after play, never as the play was happening. That was a totally new experience for me, seeing hundreds of football games.
Yeah.
Charles, that was a fun one for me. Charles, what's your next one from 2024?
Well, you know, this is probably a low light, depending, unless you're a Broncos fan.
Okay.
Because the Adonai Mitchell double pass in the Colts-Broncos game where, dude, this guy catches the ball towards the sideline on the screen, right? And he's about to throw it back to Anthony Richardson across the field. And you would have thought that it was Thanksgiving break. We're outside.
We're the turkey bowl.
Right.
It looks like the Senior Bowl. They're on the gadget.
You would thought, like, we're chatting outside with cousins we ain't seen in a couple years or something like that. He grabbed the ball, looked for the laces. He spun it around.
He spun it.
And then he took two gather steps. Right, and then just lofted it over there. I'm like, I was like, what are you doing?
There's Nick Bonitto.
Yeah, Nick Bonitto. And Nick Bonitto obviously catches out of midair.
And you hear afterwards, Eddie Mitchell goes, well, I didn't know Bonitto was going to turn into Ed Reed. It was like, well,
you took 5 seconds to throw the damn ball, dude. It's
like a minute to get Steichen said that after the game, too. He's like, I mean, just credit to Bonitto. He made a great play. I'm like,
There's some fat to trim there. I thought you were, even from that game, you had the Jonathan Taylor fumble.
Oh, my God.
Across the goal line. Because truly, just to reset what was going into that game. Like, if the Colts win that game, the Broncos lose. Like, they had the driver's seat to make the playoffs. And they were the better team that day. Clearly, and it just
and they lost 31-13.
They lost by double digits.
Yeah. When we did like the AFC, let's kind of sort this out, like contenders, pretenders. You kept saying this game is so pivotal. This Colts Broncos. You were saying that like a month ahead of time, and that's what they put on the field.
And I did the math of it. I was like, man, this game decides like everything. And then it was like, and Gus Bradley like actually had like the best game called game of his season. Everything, and then the Colts offense just. Colts offense did. Yeah, I guess that's the best way to put it.
That was a fun game from like a human interest perspective because you get to see a team just kind of fold like after as it's going on.
Yep.
And then the next week when Jonathan Taylor scores a touchdown, runs through the tunnel with the ball in his hands, I'm like, bro, ain't nobody asking you to do all that.
Go Badgers.
We're just asking you to just get across the goal line with the ball in hand.
It's still, I can't believe they overturned it. But anyways, it was still a pivotal game. Good one. That's a very good one. Matt, what's your next one?
Derrick Henry, week four against the Bills. Because I think that was
a moment.
That was a moment. It was also like crystallization of two things. Number one, obviously just like I think the theme of this season is high-end talented running backs like weaponizing already great rushing ecosystems. Like that was obviously just one of those moments. Primetime game. Everybody's watching it. Also, you know, this was kind of the first few weeks, especially week one of the Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry pairing. It was not perfect. Obviously they lose to the Chiefs in week one and they're kind of trying to figure out how they can blend, you know, Lamar Jackson's like more of a shotgun guy. That's where he gets most of his big runs where Derrick Henry's that under center runner. And he was just ripping like long runs from the pistol in that game, which was a nice like meeting in the middle for that. So number one, I think it set the Ravens run game on the trajectory it had over the course of the season. But also, like I said, it's set in kind of stone for me. This is what the season's going to be about. It's these freak show talented running backs. Obviously, we have one in the Super Bowl weaponizing an already great rushing ecosystem. So that just felt like a perfect moment for that.
Man, absolutely did. That one, too, was kind of like because week one, Ravens and Chiefs played. Yeah. And I was just kind of like, okay, Ravens offense, they're figuring things out. They're going to take a little bit, probably second half of the year. And that's when I was like, and then they lost to the Raiders. And
yeah,
I was
we
just
too,
like,
right.
I was like, okay, offense still figuring out, doing some cool stuff. And then it was just after that, was like, oh, this is not like, oh, this might be a top 10 offense. Like, this might be the best offense in the league. Shoot. hopefully, I kept them on my top 10 offense list before the season.
Only one of us did.
All right. But moving on to my next
Ravens
one.
Ravens fans still have not forgiven us for that, by the way.
I conceded so early. I was like, yeah, I thought the offensive line had more issues. It turns out Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry overcome a lot and very run-heavy offensive
Same.
Scripts.
Dude, it was like week three when we jumped off that take.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Very easy.
Stay almost. All right, not me. I was right for the beginning.
Or stay on. I don't care. I'm not going to see it either way.
I would say, no, I'm glad you brought up the running backs, though, with the Ravens and everything, because it felt like that was kind of a subplot the entire season was those running backs and the new signings. And next one for me was I was trying to find one for the Eagles that maybe kind of was like that big pivotal point, kind of like, but it was every week. Saquon Barkley was ripping off 80-yarders and 60-yarders. But it was week one, Friday night, Brazil. A lot of things felt different that week. Really just watching a game on Friday that, you know, even going Black Friday the year before was different than now going week one with that, going to the Packers. And that game in Brazil is like, you saw the big moments, you saw the wheel route to Saquon Barkley, saw other runs that happened that day. And that's where I felt like, oh, this team wants to run the ball, but this is even a little better than I was like kind of picturing in my head before the season. And I wish I bought more shares of him in fantasy. But no, it was one of those where I just thought the Eagles, their run game, like you're saying with Derrick Henry, the Ravens run game, it's just like those moments, those big plays on the big stages, like where it just kind of like felt like it's such a big moment this season.
Yeah, I think it's a big year for running backs too, right? Because we had this whole talk about the running back group chat, and I would assume their consensus was just to find new teams. because, you know, we talked a lot about Saquon, who, man, that last year with New York, I didn't know if he was dead or not. Even with Josh Jacobs with the Raiders. But you get to a more stable ecosystem, better offensive line, better play callers. Oh, no, Saquon Barkley's not dead. He's actually still probably the best.
He's the best back in the league.
Best back in the league. Josh Jacobs, one of the only working pieces of the Packers offense by the time that the season was over. We know what Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson did together this year. And not even those three. Austin Eckler, another one.
Yeah.
Who had a great, you know, maybe it didn't end well with the fumbles in the NFC championship game. Still college football brain.
Hey, Georgia didn't play. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. This 32-man dynasty league I'm running. Whooping my ass, bro. But even, you know, he had a big resurgence, I thought, on his part, in terms of, like, especially, like, efficiency per, you know, per touch.
That's great.
So I'm hoping that this kind of gets people to respect it a little bit more, because, you know, how the internet does, it takes everything a little bit too far.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And the idea that taking Saquon Barkley and adding him to your football team, or adding Josh Jacobs to your football team, the idea that that can be viewed as, like, a negative, I'm glad we got to put that to rest.
Yeah, right.
We got to put that to rest. Derrick Henry at $10 million a year, bro.
Like, who cares?
Right.
That's
nothing. That's, we got,
like,
that's nothing.
Darnell Mooney, a good player, but, like, he's making, like, $13 million. Like, Gabe Davis making, like, $13 million on the open market.
Some of the tight ends are going to pay that. Like, you know, this guy's touching the ball 20-something times. That's a third of your stats.
Yeah,
he's touching the ball. These guys definitely. It's just that the floor is so high for running backs. Like, that's where I think some of that thinking came from. But it's, like, again, like I just said, like, 15, 20 touches. Like, that matters. So give it to a guy that's actually a needle mover.
There's also something that, like, I just think with running backs and the running game in general, you, like, can't quantify.
Yeah.
You know, and like, coaches and players talk about this. Like, oh, I don't want to be running against this guy in the fourth quarter of a damn game or whatever. Or, like, in Saquon, this year's a perfect example of it, where he would talk about, yeah, I'm, like, setting runs up in the first and second quarter that are I'm taking for 3 yards or whatever that I'm going to rip for 60 in the third quarter. And again, like,
nice.
In the NFL.
Well,
it must be nice to do that. Right?
Like, I'm going
to
have a 60-yard run later.
Let's, like, write that in pen. I'm getting 60 yards later. Like, yeah, but again, you can't really quantify that in like, maybe some of those 3 yard runs are going as unsuccessful plays or whatever, but in the long run, it ends up being a great thing. Like, I think that's something that we all have to reckon with as well.
I've been trying to figure out how to, like, you know, pitch framing in baseball as well as my mind comes to with that, like, kind of something that, I mean, even some defensive stats that they didn't think were as important. And once they were able to quantify it, they all went, oh, shoot, it's really important.
Yeah.
And that's how I've been feeling about running the game. It's like, yes, I see the EPA numbers. I see success. I see yards per touch. I get all that. But there's something about a 4 yard gain on the ground is better than a 6 yard gain through the air. There's something about the body touch, the body blows that does, you know, culminate in. Matt, what was your next one?
Yeah, I've got two more that I'm kind of juggling between. I'm just going to go.
Rip them off.
I'm just going to go straight. Well, fine. The first one, which is just straight to the heart.
You just let yourself get bullied right there.
Talk more. Yeah. Talk more about, by the way, these are two receiver things. So, So, number one, Chris Godwin's first half of the season. That was, like, an awesome thing to watch. One, because it was just a player that was perfectly deployed in the right role. It's a guy that has worked so hard to get back to his prime. And of course, now he's facing another injury recovery, but hopefully he can still get the bag in the offseason. The second one that I was going to bring up was the Chargers-Bengals Sunday night football game. For two reasons, I loved this one. One, because it was perfectly in the time of the year where both these offenses looked really good. You know, even obviously the Bengals defense is terrible, but the Chargers defense had its moments, but Bengals offense gets over. You know, T. Higgins has 148 yards. Jamar Chase has two touchdowns. Like, they throw all over a really good defense. Right in the square of the time of year when you can start to convince yourself of these second, third tier teams, really third tier teams, like, maybe the Chargers can make a little run. Maybe the Bengals, if they get into the postseason.
Ooh, the Steelers look interesting.
Yeah, Steelers looking pretty good. Nah, it's the same teams in the AFC that it is every single year. So that's kind of funny to think about in that moment. But two, I did think it was a good, you know, example of what both of those teams were all year, where the Bengals, they're basically having their, like, Drew Brees Saints years where he's just putting up video game numbers, but it doesn't really matter because the defense can't do anything. But secondly, I mean, this was the Ladd McConkey game, one of the many. And obviously, McConkey was one of my favorite players to watch all year.
Yeah, I love that one. So, Ladd, I really liked Ladd, but the fact that there's, like, this much production this early was just kind of like, oh, okay, but then it makes sense with the Chargers.
Right. He's one of the most efficient receivers. He's one of the most efficient receivers in the league.
Yeah.
Not, like, among rookies or the last few rookie seasons, like, straight up, like, yards per route run against man coverage, awesome. Just yards per route run in general. Even yards per route run outside, he's, like, over 3.0. So, I mean, get that guy the ball more next year.
Yeah, and it was him and Brian Thomas Jr. had the great efficiency numbers as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know. It's just receivers.
You
can find them.
Yeah.
You can definitely find these guys. We're going to take our next break, and then we're going to come back with some predictions for 2025. Welcome back. We're at the Toyota Land Cruiser set here at Super Bowl 59 here in New Orleans. We are now going to jump into some predictions for 2025. Could be all over the place because I have no idea where these guys are going to go with it. They probably don't even know what I'm going to go with it. Probably some themes, though. Hint, hint. Charles, prediction, 2025, something we can come back to if we're back at the Toyota set next year, laugh at ourselves, or pump our chests out about something we nailed.
This is probably something that no one should ever, ever say unless being threatened by gunfire. But
I can't wait.
I know. Now I'm like,
buckle up.
Okay.
The Jacksonville Jaguars make the playoffs.
Oh, I got love a ja- that. I got a Jags one, would too.
No, it's
I love this.
It's horrible to say.
No, keep going.
Horrible to say because that team's cursed.
It is.
Officially cursed. Because we all know where they've been. They started 8-3 two seasons ago. They had a doorway into the number one seed.
And that was a Bengals game, right? Where they all came crashing.
I think it was a Bengals game.
Yeah, it was like a Monday night Bengals game. Yeah. I was just like, yeah.
You're walking into having a chance at the number one seed in the AFC. Not the AFC South, the AFC. And they've won like five games since then. Like
the fire GM.
Yeah, fire GM. Well, the Balky almost survived.
Lasted
about a month after that.
He's got to write a book about that. Yeah. Like going like how to survive.
Somehow I managed.
What is that? How to make friends and influence people? It's how to survive.
How to strengthen your cockroach antennas? Something like that. Yeah.
Forward by Littlefinger.
Your exoskeleton. How do you survive?
But we talked about Liam Cohen's offense all season, about how well-constructed it is. And, you know, you talked about Chris Godwin earlier, the season he had. At one point, they lost Chris Godwin, and Mike Evans was out. And they kept churning, you know? They still kept scoring the ball, right? A lot of that has to do with the offensive line.
Yeah.
They were incredible. You know, when you have one of the best offensive line in the league, and not only that, you're hitting crazy development arcs on some of the guys who have been there who have gone from maybe a C-minus player to like a B-plus player. Yep.
They built the whole offense for probably 4 weeks out of Kate Otten.
Yes.
And then then Mike Evans got back and Kate Otten like barely produced the rest of the year.
And, so funny. And then you're spamming screens, but it's all working. Mm-hmm. And I just think that the ability to switch on the fly like that, it bodes well for what he could potentially do in Jacksonville. You just got to get that Duval thing out of your head.
One more base in it.
it's the way he said it's not that bad. It's like the face he made during that.
No, the way he said it is bad. It's not Duval. It's Duval.
Yeah. I mean, that was, but you could get past the way he said.
No, you can't. You can't.
You got to get the visual of it out of your head. But I get it was also bad. I'm not.
It was all bad. Right.
It was all bad.
Score some points, everyone.
No one will care.
I think they can do. The only problem is, the Jaguars off the line is not close to where Tampa's is.
And they're trying to figure out the staff. And it's like, and the Bucks are saying, like, hey, screw
you. Yeah, you're not taking any of these guys.
Right. Which is, I understand.
I do too.
How they got there from that point. But, man, I just think Trevor Lawrence, who I'm still really high on, Brian Thompson Jr., who had an incredible rookie season, I think his emergence, it kind of gives some credibility to, like, what the rest of the guys are. Because those guys who were maybe number ones in the past, who should be like number twos, number threes, they kind of get to be pushed more into more suitable roles for their skill sets. And if they can just figure out how to keep everything upright with that offensive line, I think that offense could really boom this year.
Yeah, I like that.
I feel like you've been saying that for like 3 years, though.
Especially in that division. Yeah, I think it's so great that they're refreshing everything, and that's huge. Want to see some of the other kind of auxiliary moves, and then I'll be a little bit more optimistic. Yeah. You're in AFC South, man. It's not that hard to get right back in it.
No.
The defense has pieces, man. It has some pieces. You got one bona fide pass rusher.
Yep.
You've got a very solid number two.
Yep.
And then if Tyson Campbell can stay healthy, that's the top corner.
Pass rusher. And then, I know. And then, I mean, Balky invested so much in the linebacker room. At least get something.
That would be nice.
They need something along the spine. But no, I'm with you. I think that they could be refreshed. I got to see what were other moves that happened. And they got a high draft pick, too, which actually helps.
That's
too.
The hard part about doing bold predictions in January or the first week of February.
I know.
I like this
way more than mine. It's a lot more fun.
Yeah, but with bold predictions, legally, we cannot be held responsible for these.
No.
If we get them even close to right, we do get to victory lap.
This platform is the only place they're valid.
Yeah.
As soon as we don't have to address them again until we come
back
out.
Again, like I said, they're close to right. Don't even have to be like 100%. Like bold prediction, you're grading on a curve.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right.
If I remember what I said when I walk off his set, that'd be
Yeah, that's a win. That's right. I blacked out what happened. Matt, your bold prediction or a bold prediction for 2025.
Yeah, so mine was going to be top five offense for Jacksonville. I wasn't going to go playoffs. I was just going to say top five offense for Jacksonville.
You guys heard it here first. Playoff team. Ew. Top five offense.
Story of the season next year.
I don't know. We have a Jacksonville thing.
Yeah, we've been doing too many playoff shows. Like, we're talking about good teams. Like, we got to like make some fan fiction for bad teams.
Seven notes on the Raiders. Yeah, I was like, exactly. Oh, yeah, let's get all this out.
Yeah, right. But so I won't expand too much on that because you hit all those points. My other one was going to be, I think JSN leads the league in receiving next year.
Ooh,
I like that a lot.
I mean, obviously, already coming off a breakout year, he was disgustingly good in the second half of the season. I don't think people realize just how good he was, not just doing slot receiver things, but beating man coverage. Over 4 yards per route run against man coverage from week 10 on. And that was really where he won to me as a prospect, was in that intermediate middle of the field. Outbreakers, inbreakers, specifically against man coverage. That's what made him like a clear cut, not a tier one prospect like these guys we've seen like last year, Neighbors and everybody like that. But I mean, that second tier down, which again, to me, is a clear first round prospect, somebody you can build your entire passing game around. And I think in this offense with Clint Kubiak, he will probably be that featured receiver, not like the typical Shanahan X receiver, like the Nico Collinses or the Ayukes or anything like that, but that guy that moves around the formation, can play inside out. I think he's just going to get loaded up with targets next year, especially because they've kind of already done the ceremonial goodbye for Tyler Lockett. I don't think he's a part of this team anymore, which I'm not really ready to come to terms with that because I love Tyler Lockett as a player, but it's been a slow decline for him. And I think there's a chance DK Metcalf's not on this team next year either.
I'm curious what they do with Metcalf. Yeah, that's really interesting to me because he's not exactly a perfect fit for the offense. Like, yeah, he looks like an X that a Kubiak or a Shanahan would like, but it's kind of like, maybe his actual route tree and everything isn't exactly what we want.
I will say if they do stick with Metcalf as the X there, yeah, it's probably going to be less like go routes and stop routes where he really has struggled to come back to the ball. He will probably be running more in breakers and things like that, which he can do that a little bit
better. And you get those legs going and everything. Yeah. Oh man, this is, I kind of had a one that was Seahawks related, so might as well just get right into it. I had two just in case. Mine was the Seahawks will not only make the playoffs next year, they're going to win a playoff game.
Ooh.
And that is because I liked what was happening with their defense last year, especially the second half of the year. I liked Kubiak as far as, okay, am I going to say he's going to set the world on fire like he did the first 2 weeks this year? Probably not, but he's above board. He is definitely an NFL play caller, NFL like a valid one, above B-, I would say, a B. And also just some of the offense makes sense as far as what they have. Geno understand will be interesting, but as far as some of the run game stuff, I think both of the running backs are going to excel in this run scheme. Being more under center, more zone run heavy, stuff like that. They need to find a fullback and everything. And I also think it'll help out the offensive line and some of the deficiencies they have there. I also think that offensive line did much better in the second half of the year because they switched some of the personnel and everything. But they can really revamp that, which was such a glaring weakness. I don't think Kubiak's going to be whatever they were, 75% pass this past year with that offensive line. It was just so crazy. So I felt better about their defense than their offense, which is not what I expected before the year. And that's maybe I'm continuing that bullishness into next year. So, yeah, I'm going to continue with the Seahawks and go with going there. Win a playoff game next year.
Yeah. As long as they can fix it off the line.
That's it. And they
I feel like he said on so many teams.
Oh, yeah.
And we act like it's like, because then the Bucks do what they did. And then I'm like, oh, see?
Yeah.
See, everyone can do it. You just got to add a center. You just need
two first-round picks,
You need your right tackle to improve to, like, really good. Your right guard to go from barely playable to pretty good, and then you need to sign a left guard for 1 year and actually be pretty good.
Not to mention, take the guy that has played right tackle his entire career, switch him to the left side.
And be an all pro, anyways. Yeah. It's easy. And then actually,
never been done before in the history of the league.
It's easy. I know. So teams keep, and then like the Chiefs a couple years ago when they revamped their O line, it's like, see, you just got to invest a little bit. It's easy.
This reminds me, I was hanging out with our mutual friend Richard Johnson back in New York a couple weeks ago, and we were hanging with some buddies. We were talking about the draft, and one of our friends is more of a casual fan. He's like, oh, he's like, I hate offensive tackle picks in the first round. And I was like, bro, why?
He's not listening to Football 301. No, he's Football 101. Right. For
and
him.
we're I'm pulling out some strands. I'm like, what's going on here? And we get to the root of it. I don't know who they are. And
that's it.
I was like, that's it.
That's,
I was like,
absolutely.
But you know, because he's a Falcons fan too. I was like, look at the Falcons' best lineman over the past few years. Jake Matthews, first round pick. Chris Lynchum, first round pick. Matt Bergeron, top of the second. Yep. You know, like,
traded up for him.
Yeah, pedigree matters. So.
It does.
It's on these guys.
You're not going to hit all of them like the Dolphins and Texans. You're not going to. But like investing in them absolutely matters. So yeah, well, look at the Chargers fans and the Joe Alt pick. How many wanted neighbors? How about you get Joe Alt and Ladd McConkey? Yeah.
Dude, there were still people after the Chargers lost in the playoff game, like, man, Malik Nabers really would have looked good in charge. Like, no.
Did you see what was happening to Justin back there? Yeah. That's, you guys still need three more lines.
Like, they would have had a 70% pressure rate in that game.
See, you can invest in them. They have
It's just kind of, I think it's something that people understand more with defensive linemen than offensive linemen.
They're tackling the quarterback. Right. Like,
yeah, they can play a highlight reel on the draft shows things like that.
But, you know, if I talk to you about defensive linemen, like, people understand when they see, you know, Ndamukong Suh go around like a 4.8 at 300 pounds. Yeah. That's crazy.
Right.
And there's not that many people like that on the planet. It's the same is true for offensive line.
Like a left tackle getting a cutoff block on the backside.
That's
which
crazy.
Is like one of the most athletic plays in football, but I get it. It just doesn't look sexy.
It doesn't look sexy.
But it matters.
But let me tell you, matters. If you can find a 6'7", 300-pound person that can get in a three-point stance, like, you found something kind of rare, man.
It's the world theory. That's what it is.
Yes. Planet world theory.
That's what it is. What was your next one, Charles? Do you have another bold prediction for this season?
I mean, Jaguars is
pretty
tough.
Good.
It's pretty spicy.
It's weird because I think these might conflict, but I also think Anthony Richardson, I think this is a year he maybe figures it out.
Okay.
Which is,
I like how figure it out has now become bold.
It went from like, oh, he's going to take a huge leap this year. For me, this is how I feel too.
Okay. And I know that this is, you get influenced by things you see in person. Right. And one of the games that I saw in person this year was his game against the Jets.
Right. Where he looked very
real. Phenomenal in that game. And it's coming back to like the Planet Theory stuff. There are so few guys that are that big and that fast that can throw the ball that well, or, you know, at least that hard. And I really do think he sees the field well.
He does. He moves in the pocket.
Right. He moves in the pocket well.
Yeah.
It's just when that ball comes out of his hand sometimes, it might not be exactly where it needs to go. But when the whole package comes together, that's one of the most explosive, dynamic playmaking quarterbacks in the league. And I'm hoping that, you know, hasn't played too many games, but if you can just get 2 years of NFL quote unquote experience of what he has, move it into this upcoming year, I still think there's a very real chance that he can reach his ceiling. I know maybe people aren't quite as bullish on him. I think my optimism has dulled a little bit after last season, but I still think there's so much to go still grab there for him.
And he's so, the thing that I keep coming back to, and I hate always using this, is like, he is so young and hasn't played a lot. Like, he's younger than guys that are coming out in this year's draft. And it's like, and still has more tools and more, like, and ranking this class. It's like, I'd still rather take a chance on him than insert quarterback name here. So that's where I kind of keep coming back to. So I just wanted their season to be so much more normal than it was. And they could have had the most normal season ever. Been like, oh, nice, good for the Colts. You know, get their 8 wins, 9 wins. Okay, good for them. But they just had to just be chaos this year.
I think the fact that they brought Ballard and Steichen back, that makes me a little nervous, just because, like, that pressure is going to be cooking quick.
Yeah.
Like, the fan base is already pissed off, you know, and you got McAfee on ESPN stirring the pot too. Like, that does make me a little nervous about the Colts, where just I think that pressure cooker could be pretty tight pretty quick.
You mentioned McAfee. We had a Mike Vanderjagt story lately. Remember the kicker from the Colts?
Oh, yeah.
Payton would get mad at him and say, our kicker's getting all liquored up out there. And I was like, oh. I was like, yeah, we got Colts kickers talking about it. Yeah, let's get them in the news again.
Kickers.
Matt, you have another 2025 prediction to close us out?
I do, yes. And this I actually am going to bring to the, back to the thing we discussed at the top.
Jaguars again?
No, the Myles Garrett thing.
Because
I didn't think about this team yet, but I think the Panthers are going to win the South next year. And I think the Panthers could be a sneaky Myles Garrett spot. Number one, because, like, nobody talks about the Panthers. So I guarantee you, when you get a bunch of, like, these shows that are like, let's theorize Myles Garrett spots, Panthers probably not going to come up. But I think the offense is pretty much set in Carolina. Like, they could use one more guy in the receiver room unless Xavier Leggett takes like a big step in his second season. I do think they need like a man coverage beating X receiver, because I don't think that's Leggett's role. Adam Thielen's still playing pretty good football for them, and Jalen Coker's the man. Like, that guy's a good football player, but he's still like a slot flanker type player, which again does overlap a little bit with Thielen and where I think Leggett would be best deployed. So they do kind of need one more receiver, but other than that, offensive line is good. The running back, Chuba Hubbard, is good. I mean, you basically burned the Jonathan Brooks pick, and it probably doesn't even really matter at this point.
We got those couple carries or whatever that was.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks. I do feel bad because I think he would have been a great compliment for Hubbard. But otherwise, Hubbard's a good player. Like, Jatavion Sanders, interesting tight end. Bryce obviously was playing good football by the end of the season. So I think the offense is generally set. Why not just throw all your resources at the defensive side of the football after having a historically bad performance? And what better way to do it than, like, yeah, go trade for Myles Garrett. Like, who cares? I mean, you're going to burn all those picks on defense anyways. You might as well spend them on a guy that
is really good.
Yeah,
especially with, they still have some draft capital to be given up to the Bears, which is like, oh, that's tough.
Yeah.
But I'm with you on that. Like, I've been kicking around with the Myles Garrett stuff because it's like, oh, that would look cool. Oh, that would look really cool. But the Carolina one, too, they have a team with cap space. They're a team that can do some things with their roster because of what they've invested in, and they need help on defense. Like, every stat, they did some interesting things on defense, but as every stat I looked at and when I watched them on eye test,
yeah,
it's like they're the worst or second worst or third worst in everything you look at. So it's like, yeah, they need some juice. That's what happens when you trade the defensive tackle went down, Brown,
yeah,
and then they traded Brian Burns. It's like, oh, yeah, you just lost your two best players. Yeah, that's going to do that. Like, pop,
pop. I have one more hot take. Oh, one more hot take.
Okay.
Cowboys break their NFC Championship streak.
Yeah,
and only
what?
Only for
that's
one,
great.
Only for one reason.
Oh, because social is so happy right
now. Yeah,
clip
this.
Because, and it's not for any on-field reason outside of Dak Prescott coming back and Micah Parsons blacking out at the end of the season with rage.
He was. Yeah,
and swim moves. You know, every year there's one move that gets dumped on so hard that it like just launches some opposite effect. I think last year was the Commanders because Dan Quinn was not the most popular hire. Cliff Kingsbury was not a popular hire at the time. And we saw how far they made it. So my counterculture swing is that the Dallas Cowboys, on the backs of a press conference that I attended in person, in the flesh, with blisters on my feet, listen to Jerry Jones talk 80 minutes, not about Brian Schottenheimer, but about himself. Stephen Jones did air quotes around Super Bowl. All of this is going to do, you know, counterculture wave to get the Cowboys back into the NFC title game. They'll never get there again for as long as we live.
I like this a lot.
That's so good.
So they got Eberflus at D coordinator. They hired Clayton Adams, O-line coach, which actually I really like him for the Cardinals. I haven't commented on that. I actually really like that move. So I was like, oh, okay. That's interesting to me.
It's not there. It's not a bear comfort. No. I mean, they
have players. I mean,
they do.
Dude, the back half of the season, they beat the Buccaneers.
No, yeah, I know. The offensive line was like improving.
I actually think we forgot. I was like, oh, yeah, Dak's good. Like, yeah. You know, that's the thing. They're doing it with Trey Lance and
Cooper Rush
and his incentives.
if Micah Parsons comes back next season as angry as he was to close this year,
because
he tried to win every game.
Dude.
Oh, that's a good point, too. And they'll wait till the last minute.
Yeah, you know they're waiting to the last minute. They are going to franchise him at least once.
No, it's a good point, too. And now and they got something out of the running game at the end of the year, too, which was a huge thing with Rico Dowdle and stuff like that. I know
he's a free agent, but...
Yeah, I know. But with the Ash and Genty stuff going there, but okay. Right, excuse that. I think they kind of know, too. It's like, all right, we need a second receiver. All right, then we try to get one more year of Brandon Cooks and everything. But I'm like, yeah, second receiver. All of a sudden, it's like, okay, Jake Ferguson's your number three, de facto number three.
It's really not that bad.
You have
a
decent running back and a running back class that's pretty juicy. Like, yeah, okay. Cowboys final four.
No, you said
finals. NFC title game. Just the final four.
Final four.
Okay. I like that. I'll close out a quick one just because I think we've gone 80 straight shows of mentioning the Cardinals, which I just did actually with Clint Adams.
I was surprised that you hadn't made it here yet.
Yeah, here we are.
I was like, you haven't talked Cardinals and you haven't said anything sad about the Falcons yet.
You even said complimentary about their offensive line building.
Yeah. I'm not sneak that in there.
No, I'm not going to let the energy of New Orleans taint me that week.
I'll do that when I'm home.
Let's stay strong on that.
I'm going to go, man, see, like, you did the Jackson Smith and Jigbo lead the NFL in receiving, and I was like, kind of like, I don't want to like co-opt that one. So it was Marvin Harrison Jr. will lead all the guys of his class, Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr., Roman Dunze, Ladd McConkey, and all three stats.
Wow, all three. Isn't it crazy how that's a bold prediction now?
Receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns next year. Of his little second year receivers, he will lead that class. That is my bold take with it. I think Cardinals are in an interesting spot, but I'm still bullish on them. I mean, that defense really looked a lot better, but I still think the offense is going to go through this offseason and go like, okay, what do we need to tweak? They hit kind of a ceiling with what their attack was this year. Maybe Clayton Adams leaving might change some of that, but who knows? But I think that that is going to be some of the, they're going to tweak. All right, we're going to use Marvin in this role. We're going to use Marvin. We're going to expand his role. Maybe even more creative. I know. We've had 40 discussions on it.
Let's hope.
He can hit 20 miles an hour, too. Do you know that? But watching him back, it's one of those. He's got to work on catching at the catch point. That is a thing. You brought it up very early.
Yeah.
And that it was a thing. But at the end of the year, you could see him starting to rip and turn on some of those. So you could see him working on it. Give him an offseason. It's a young guy. He works hard from everyone I've talked to. And I think they're going to tweak some things. So maybe Cardinals playoff team could be a sub one. But I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to lead all the second-year players. Not as bold, but yeah, I think that's where we're at.
No, I think that is bold, which again is crazy because he was the freaking fourth overall pick and he has just been completely passed up from a production standpoint by Brian Thomas Jr., by Malik Nabers, by Ladd McConkey. And I mean, he's kind of looked at, I mean, dude, that needs to come true for so many like dynasty players there. Cause I mean, those people that probably like tanked for Marvin for 2 years
that's their own fault.
I mean, that is 1000% their own fault. Never do that. But at the same time, yeah, I the Kyler of it all still does like trip me up. Cause I wonder if they're going to get to into this point where every offense just becomes kind of the same cycle, you know, around Kyler. But otherwise, like, yeah, from Harrison's perspective, I do think it's good to point out that, yeah, by the end of the year, he was starting to make some more plays in tight coverage. Because that really, once he corrects that, and I do think that is a correctable issue, I think he can still be, you know, maybe he'll always have gone down as an overhyped player because of his name and all that stuff. I get it. Like, generational prospect is usually, you're tagging the guy to be an underperformer based on those expectations. But I still think when I watch him, I see a guy that can be a number one receiver in the league.
Absolutely. I think also his game is kind of, it's a finesse game. Yeah. It's all about craftiness and route running, but he's just 6'4 or 6'3, 210 doing it. So I think that's kind of, it's not the Jamar Chase dunk on you play.
Yeah, they have to come to terms with the player that he is. Because it felt like at the beginning of the year, they didn't quite understand.
They act like he was Andre Johnson or something like that.
Yeah, like he's George Pickens or like he should be doing that type of stuff. Like, yeah, you can't just throw him out at X receiver every single snap. So that will be one that we'll know how that's going to age like 30 minutes into the first game.
Oh, no, absolutely. I'm going to be looking at every – oh, there he is, X in the 3x1.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no, that's exactly that's another back shoulder target.
No. I appreciated Kyler trying, but I was like, can you guys complete
Give it up.
Some of these?
Yeah,
because it's what I saw.
You got to go know when to stop trying. That's a skill too.
All right, guys, I'll wrap it up for our first show here in New Orleans. We're going to be back later this week with our gigantic Super Bowl preview. Closing out today. So that'll be me, Matt, Charles. I was going to say the gruesome twosome, but it's like, what is that, the fearsome threesome? No. Ooh. Oh, God.
Workshop on this.
Workshop. We got a couple days to do that. But I am Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. Charles, where can they find you? What are you working on this week as well?
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah, you are, aren't you?
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. You know, I'll be doing my usual interviewing guys around at their hotels. Other than that, you know, I'll be here on Wednesday and then
from there. I'll see you there. It's a little different when we're in person. We've been talking all day too.
Once I get my writing done, I have like nothing to do the rest of the week. So
great.
We'll see.
Prep the show. Yeah. Matt, yourself?
Yeah, Matt Harmon_BYB. What am I working on? I mean, yeah, we'll be here talking to you guys, talking to some players. We got a lot of cool stuff coming up. Got a big fantasy show on Wednesday as well.
Yeah, that's going to be great. Also, make sure to send in those mailbag questions. Probably not going to get to it in the Super Bowl preview, but we have plenty of time in the offseason, and they've been great, actually, so I can't wait to get to a couple of those. Send those in to football301mailbag@yahoosports.com or leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Also, subscribe, rate us, do all the fun stuff. Also, subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Check us out there. Again, I am Nate Tice. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for checking us out. See you guys next time.